Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
So I have a confession to make. I watch cooking shows. Wait. I watch competitive cooking shows. Does that make it? I'm not sure why you're clapping, but does that make it more manly? Like, I don't watch shows where it's just cooking. Next, stuff the chicken. I don't watch that. I watch manly, competitive cooking shows where there's a winner and a loser. Like, yeah, someone loses. They don't get anything. That's manly. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I don't care. But one of the shows that I like is Chopped. Anyone seen Chopped? Yeah. So they have four great skilled chefs who compete for $20,000, and they have to make something out of whatever ingredients they're provided in the Chopped mystery basket. They're given four ingredients. One or two are usually good, and then two or three are awful. Like, here are some of the actual ingredients they've been given. Pickled pig lips, that was one. Eyeballs, bitter melon. You might say, I like melon. You don't like bitter melon, it's bitter. Coagulated pig's blood, that was an ingredient. Goat brains, gummy candy, which gummy candy is delicious, but not cooked with goat brains. Like, that's not good, right? So they get an ingredient or two that they would want, and then two or three they don't want. Ingredients no one would choose, and they have to try to make something delicious out of these ingredients. And isn't that the way life works? Right? I mean, if we got everything we wanted, it'd be easy, right? If we got all the right ingredients, loving parents and a great job and straight A's and financial security and super metabolism that you can eat milkshakes and still stay skinny, a supportive spouse and perfect kids and the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup every year. What? Well, then, sure, give me that. I can make a great life out of it, right? I achieve my destiny? Yes, I can. But no, we don't get all that, right? We get the mystery basket of ingredients. And usually, yeah, there's a good thing or two that we get, but then we get a few ingredients no one would choose. Maybe it's abusive or absent parents, bad health, divorce, a rebellious kid, laid off from your job, loneliness, milkshakes settle right on your hips. We want our life to go a certain way. We have dreams. We want to step into our destiny, but it seems like too often it doesn't go the way we planned. We don't get the ingredients we want to make the life we want. Last week, we started a brand new series called Dream to Destiny. And we're talking about how we can move from our dreams to our destiny. And to do that, we are studying the fascinating life of a guy in the Bible named Joseph. Joseph comes from a famous family of faith. He was the son of Jacob, the grandson of Isaac, and the great-grandson of Abraham. We're all like major players in Bible history. And last week we saw that Joseph grew up in a really dysfunctional home. His father was married to four women at the same time. He had 10 older brothers, one younger, with four different mothers. Joseph was his father's favorite, and unfortunately, his dad made it obvious. Like, he made this incredible, expensive, special, ornate coat, and he gave it to Joseph, and none of the other kids got one. We said last week, it'd be kind of like having a bunch of kids, and on Christmas, you give one of them an Xbox, and the others a box. Or if you gave one an iPad, and the rest an iPad. And so, look how the brothers react to this special coat and preferential treatment. Genesis 37:4. We'll put all the verses on the screen for you. We give out free Bibles if you don't have one or want one. It says, but his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him. Some of you know how quickly you don't get to choose your own ingredients because you didn't have the family that you'd want. Maybe instead of a home filled with love and support and encouragement, you grew up in a home filled with hate or criticism, negativity, maybe worse. Joseph grew up in a dysfunctional home. He had three stepmothers. He had a bunch of angry half-brothers. It sounds like a bad reality TV show. And Joseph didn't help the situation because when he was pretty young, he had this dream. And it was a dream that all of his brothers would one day bow down to him. If you're taking notes today, write this down. If you have a dream that your siblings bow down to you, you don't have to tell them. Just keep that one to yourself. But Joseph doesn't. He shares the dream, and it makes his brothers hate him even more. Well, one day, Jacob, the father, sends Joseph out to check on his 11 brothers who are out working in the fields. Question, why isn't Joseph out working in the fields with all the other brothers? Because he was dad's favorite, and he always got preferential treatment. Well, he goes out to the fields to check on his brothers wearing, what do you think? Yes, the special, ornate, fancy coat, which seems a little weird, right? Like, you don't wear a wedding dress to do yard work, right? Like, what's he doing here? But Joseph, of course, is wearing his special coat, which makes it easy for his brothers to see him from a distance. Here we go, starting in verse 18 of chapter 37 of Genesis. It says, when Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. Yeah, because the coats. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. Here comes the dreamer, they said. Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. But when Reuben, not the sandwich, he's one of the brothers. Were you confused? No? Okay. But when Reuben heard of their scheme, he came to Joseph's rescue. Let's not kill him, he said. Why should we shed any blood? Let's just throw him into this empty cistern here in the wilderness. Then he'll die without our laying a hand on him. Reuben was secretly planning to rescue Joseph and return him to his father. So when Joseph arrived, his brothers ripped off the beautiful robe he was wearing. Then they grabbed him and threw him into the cistern. Now, the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. Wow. So Jacob is thrown into a pit. And I know none of us have ever had angry siblings throw us in a pit to die. Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. But here's what I believe. All of us have found ourselves in a pit. Right? Where we are forced to deal with a mystery basket of ingredients we never would have chosen for ourselves. We've all found ourselves stuck in a bad situation that we did not know how to get out of. And it can be something that happens over time, right? Maybe you fell into a money pit of debt. Or you had a relationship that fell apart week by week by week. Or it can be something that happens so quickly, just like for Joseph. Like, you begin the day like any other, and then something happens and it changes everything. Like, you get called into your boss's office and she says, I'm sorry, but your position has been eliminated. Or you discover a lump and it might be cancerous. Or you get that phone call from your kid's school. Your spouse sits you down and says, I just don't love you anymore. Or you get a text, Dad had a heart attack, we're headed to the hospital. And things can change so quickly, and we have all found ourselves in pits that we never expected to be in. To get from our dream to our destiny, we have to get out of the pit. The problem is that there are temptations that we face when we're in the pit. And if we fall to these temptations, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to ever get out of the pit. So when you're in the pit, you are tempted to blame others. Joseph obviously would have been tempted to blame his brothers, and with good reason, his brothers were responsible for him being in the pit. And whatever pit you're in, I bet there are some people who contributed to you being in there. And man, it's easy to blame them because they are responsible. Joseph down in the pit would have been tempted to blame his brothers. But the reality is, like, Joseph was also responsible for his being in the pit, right? He was so either proud or naive that he shared the dream with his brothers. When his dad sent his brothers out to work in the fields, he should have insisted, hey, I should go out and work with them. And he definitely didn't need to provoke his brother's anger by wearing the coat. But Joseph definitely would have been tempted to blame others and to be in that pit feeling like a victim. The problem is, people who feel like victims stay victims. People who have a victim mentality never change. They never grow. They don't get out of the pit. A victim mentality is what keeps so many people from ever stepping into their destiny. So we can blame others. Did they do things? Yes. Was it wrong? Yes. Did it hurt? Yes. Is that why we're in the pit? Yes. Probably. Partially. But we also have to take responsibility, and we will stay in the pit forever. We will never move forward if we don't. If you're thinking, man, like, I hear you, but you don't know what was done to me. I kind of get it. So I had a father who was abusive, and when I was 11, he just walked out and abandoned us forever. And I want to blame every negative thing in my life right now on him. I could, but if I have that kind of victim mentality, I will stay a victim. And I can't, because I have a destiny to get to. And we need to stop blaming others, and we just need to take responsibility. The other temptation when you're in the pit is to blame God. Like Joseph might have thought, I don't get this. Like, I believe in God. I live my life for God. And we'll see, he did. Why would God allow this to happen to me? Why wouldn't he take care of me? Why wouldn't he stop this from happening? And Joseph must have been tempted to blame God, but he didn't. We're going to see this throughout the story in the next few weeks, that no matter what happened to him, he just trusted God. And he remained faithful. I'm not saying that he wasn't tempted to blame God, because I bet he was. We all are. But he didn't blame God, and we don't have to either. Listen, you have a God who loves you. And yes, bad things happen in life. And no, it's not God's will that they happen. It's not part of God's plan. People say, well, everything happens for a reason. No. Some things are never supposed to happen. Some things were not supposed to happen. And God doesn't cause them to happen, but he is there for you when they do. And he is with you even in the pit, even when you can't sense his presence at all. He is there for you, and so you can cry out to him. And if, instead of blaming others and instead of blaming God, you trust God and you call out to him, he can get you out of the pit. That's what happens next with Joseph. Next verse, it says, then just as they were, so the brothers just threw him in the pit to die. Then just as they, the brothers, were sitting down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of camels in the distance coming toward them. It was a group of Ishmaelite traders taking a load of gum, balm, and aromatic resin from Gilead down to Egypt. Judah said, he's one of the brothers, said to his brothers, what will we gain by killing our brother? We'd have to cover up the crime. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. So when the Ishmaelites, who were Midianite traders, came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern and sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. And the traders took him to Egypt. Okay, you got this, right? So the brothers throw Joseph in the pit, leave him there to die, and then sit down to eat lunch. Dang, right? How could you be so heartless, right? You gotta be pretty callous to eat right after condemning an innocent man to die. It's like, die, brother. Who's got the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? Like, they're eating, they're sitting eating, and Joseph is right over there in the pit. Like, he's probably like, guys, hey, guys, really, guys, right? But then one of the brothers, Judah, he sees this caravan of Ishmael. It's almost like a group of traveling gypsies, and he says, hey, instead of just leaving Joseph to die, we could make some money. And so they sell Joseph into slavery, and then pass the Doritos, bruh. Like, they just go back to eating their lunch. So Joseph is out of the pit. Yay! But now he's a slave. Boo! And obviously, this is not an ingredient he would choose either, right? Do you know why he wouldn't choose that ingredient? Someone in last service said, because it sucks. Being a slave sucks. That's true. But do you know the reason he wouldn't choose it? Because he didn't know what God was doing in his life. And so often, we don't know what God is doing in our life. I mean, think about the fact that, so Joseph's brothers throw him in a pit to die, right? And then instead of going home, they decide, well, let's first eat lunch. That's weird, right? And then while they're eating lunch, this group of Ishmaelite traders happen by. Just that moment, that's weird. Like, that is such a total coincidence. No, I don't think so. I think it was a God incident. God was moving Joseph from his dream to his destiny. Joseph had to be broken of his pride, and that pit and the slavery that was to come, that would do that in his life. And Joseph had to be moved to Egypt because it turns out that's where his destiny is. And that is exactly where this caravan takes him. See, God was at work in a powerful and amazing way in Joseph's life. And Joseph was completely unaware. As far as he knew, God was absent from his life. All he knew is that he went from being his dad's favorite in the morning to being a slave by late afternoon. And so often, we just don't know what God is doing in our lives. We think we do, or we think God's just ignoring us because it's obvious he's not doing anything. But no, that doesn't mean he's not doing anything. This has happened to me over and over and over and over again. I've seen it in other people's lives. Like, God can be actively moving us to our destiny, and we have no idea. And the question in those moments, when you're in the pit, when you've been sold into slavery, when you've gotten the mystery basket of ingredients you don't want, the question, and it seems like God is not involved at all, the question is, will you stay faithful to him? Will you stay faithful to him? When you're in the pit and it seems like God is absent, will you stay faithful to him? That became the question for Joseph. In the pit, now a slave, would he stay faithful to God? I mean, now, he literally finds himself a slave. His hands are tied, he's being treated like an animal, and he's taken to Egypt. Look at the next verses. Meanwhile, the Midianite traders arrived in Egypt, where they sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. So Pharaoh was the king of Egypt. Potiphar was the head of Pharaoh's bodyguard and his chief executioner. Of all people for Joseph to be sold to, guess what? Not a coincidence. This is another God incident, because it turns out Joseph's destiny is with the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and God just put him in the perfect position to make his dreams come true. But Joseph does not know that, right? For him, this is bad. He has been sold into slavery for the chief executioner for the king. This was a tough man, right? If you're a slave, this is the last person that you want to be bought by. He knows how to teach obedience. He would teach a new slave to respect authority by beating him and whipping him. Joseph went from being this coddled, you know, favorite of his father to now working for this man where he is given the worst places to sleep, the worst jobs. He is cleaning toilets. He is carrying burdens in the heat of the desert. He has to live in this foreign country where he can't even speak the language. None of these are ingredients that he would choose. And so again, the question becomes, will he stay faithful to God? With this basket of ingredients, it would be so easy to give up on God, right? But to get to your destiny, you can't. You can't give up on God. You have to stay faithful. And by the way, just to encourage you, lots of people do. Like I could introduce you to people who are dying of brain cancer, to women who just found out their husband's cheating on them, to guys who can't seem to break free of their addiction, to people who have gone over a year without a job and who still believe in God, still believe that God is with them, and still believe that God is actively doing something in their life, even though they cannot see what it is right now. And they are choosing to stay faithful to God. And if you want to reach your destiny, you have to. So, when you get the awful basket of mystery ingredients, will you stay faithful to God? Joseph did. It says, the Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. This pleased Potiphar, so he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything he owned. And it would have been so easy for Joseph to feel sorry for himself, right? I don't deserve this. I'm no slave. I'm not going to work hard for this guy, to be mad at his brothers, to blame God, to not be faithful. But he didn't. He made the best out of a bad situation. He went to work. He worked hard. He learned the language. He learned the culture. And he remained faithful to God. He remained faithful to God. And his new boss noticed. Like he could see there is something different about this slave. And he decided God is with this guy. Which is interesting because he would not have been someone who believed in God. But he's like, there's something going on with this guy. And he promoted Joseph because of it. Joseph was faithful to God, and God was faithful to Joseph. You may not know this, but that's a promise that God has made to all of us. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30, God says, I will honor those who honor me. Joseph honored God, and God honored Joseph. God took something really bad that was done to Joseph and started making it into something really good. Like, come back the next few weeks. You're going to see this story gets crazier and crazier, and it gets to a really good place. So, have you watched Chopped? Because here's the thing. That the chef, they take this awful ingredients, and they make something amazing out of it. Like, the chefs will take this coagulated pig's blood, sea cucumber, cheddar cheese, and goat's brain, and they give it to the judges, and the judges are eating this dish that they make, and they're like, this is delicious. Like the chefs are just that talented. And God is that talented. He can take all the bad ingredients that you get in life, and he can work them together and make something really good. It's actually another promise that God has given to us. In a book called Romans, in chapter 8, verse 28, it says, in all things, in no matter what you get in that basket, in all things, the good things, the bad things, in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. See, God didn't cause the bad things that happened to us, but he can make good out of the bad things that happened to us. I bet you've probably already experienced this. And I bet you've probably already experienced this in ways that you don't even realize yet. But like, I've had so many times that I thought something was really bad, and now I look back and I'm like, oh. I think in heaven someday, we're going to discover that there were all kinds of bad things and all kinds of seemingly insignificant things that God used to move us to our destiny. God can make good out of bad things that happen to us. He can even use those bad things to get us to our destiny. And so, you can trust him. You can trust that he is at work, even if you can't see it. He can do that for you. But I'm just going to be really honest with you, and I don't know if you'll relate to this or not. The struggle I have is, so I totally believe that God can do this. I mean, after all, he is God. He's good at stuff. And I've seen him. I've seen him do it over and over and over in my life and other people's lives. So I totally believe that God can do this. But honestly, I struggle sometimes to believe that he would want to, like for me. Because I have made so many mistakes in my life, and I am such a mess of a person, and so often I feel like such a loser. And so I'm tempted to think, well, yeah, he can, but why would he want to do something amazing like that for me, the loser? There's a word that is the answer to that question, and that word is grace. Grace literally means to give someone the opposite of what they deserve. It's giving love when there is no reason to give love. So on one episode of Chopped, yes, we're going back to Chopped. I told you I like Chopped. So on this one episode, one of the chefs, that you kind of get to meet them and hear their story, one of the chefs proclaims early on, I'm a Christian. And he keeps saying it, I'm a Christian, as a Christian chef. And you might think, Vince is a pastor, and so I'd be like, oh, yay, a Christian. But I didn't. I went, oh, no, a Christian. Because Christians are supposed to represent Christ, Christian. We're supposed to represent God. And God is love. That's what the Bible tells us. But way too often, Christians don't represent Jesus, and they give people the wrong impression of God. And this guy, every single time he speaks, he says, well, as a Christian chef, and well, you know, I'm a Christian. And so I just keep thinking, please don't be a jerk. Please don't be a jerk. But please, like, you're on national TV. Show everyone what God is really like. But one of the other contestants in this episode is this lady, I think probably late 20s, and her story is that she had a really hard life. Her mother was never there for her. She was raised by her grandmother, and her grandmother lives in France, and she's literally on her deathbed. They think she has weeks, maybe a month or two to live, and so she says, if I win the $20,000, I am going to get to go and see my grandma one last time. I can't afford that, but if I win the $20,000, I could go and see my grandma who raised me one last time. Finally, it gets down to the last two contestants, the Christian, who it has turned out has been a really cool guy, and this girl who has had such a hard life and just wants to go see her grandma before she dies. And I'm like, sorry, Christian dude, I'm rooting for the girl so she can go see her grandma. But no, Christian dude wins. He's really good. And the girl is chopped, and her head just drops. And she starts to walk off the set, and the Christian dude says, wait. And she turns around, and he reaches out to her, and he says, you need to see your grandma. I'm going to give you the money. Yeah, that's what I said. What actually happened was the girl just starts crying. The judges start crying. I started crying. I'm like, he gave her the $20,000, but she's the loser. Like, I think if I was on the show, I would have been like, wait, how much is a plane ticket? Right? Like, $1,000, you get $1,000, I get $19,000, right? And that would have been really cool of me if I did that. But no, he just gave it all to her. So why did he give it to her? Why did he help her? He didn't even know her. She didn't do anything for him. She was the loser. Why did he help her? Why? There's a word for that. And the word is grace. Grace means to give someone the opposite of what they deserve. It's giving someone a free love gift when there's no reason to. And that chef, he has the grace of God, the love of God inside of him. And that's what the grace of God does. It reaches out to people who need help. It reaches out to people who are willing to receive it. That's when he said, wait, I'm going to give you the money. Immediately, my question was, would she say, I can't? No, thank you. I can't take it. Right? She could have. And God's grace is free, and he's reaching out, but you have to be willing to receive it, right? And it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter how bad your sin is. It doesn't matter where you were last night. It's not how grace works. It is not earned. It is a love gift freely given. And God's grace is reaching out to you. It's offering to save you from your sin. Like we all have done things that we know are wrong, we're embarrassed of, we know God knows they're wrong, and God's grace is offering to save you from your sin. So after this service, like at 1:15, about 10 minutes after we're done, we've got a few people getting baptized today, and what they're doing is those people are choosing to receive God's grace gift that he's offered. When you say yes, the Bible says the next thing you do is you go through this beautiful ceremony called baptism. That's what they're going to be doing. And God's grace is reaching out to you to offer to save you from your sin and also to help you get out of the pit, to take whatever ingredients you've been given and help you to make something good out of them, to lead you to your destiny. God is offering you his grace, his love, his help. Will you receive it? Will you put your faith in him? And will you stay faithful even when it's hard? We're going to give you a couple minutes to think about that, to pray about that. Maybe you're in a pit and you just need to call out to God. Or maybe you need to realize that he's been reaching out to you and you need to receive him. Maybe he's been at work in your life and you can take these minutes to see what God has been doing that you haven't even been aware of. During this time, we also remember God's grace to us through Jesus. Here's just one last Bible verse. It's a powerful one. Romans chapter 5, verse 10. It says, for since our friendship with God was restored by the death of his Son, while we were still his enemies, we will certainly be saved through the life of his Son. What that's saying is that God loves us so much that when we were at our worst, he gave us his best, Jesus. Jesus was willing to die for us when we were stuck in the pit of our sin. His death, if we put our faith in him, takes away our sin. And so now, what wouldn't he do for us? You can trust him. He is at work in your life. I don't have to worry about whether he's willing because of grace. And we remember what Jesus did for us through communion. We have communion on the candlelit tables around the room. If you'd like to take it today, certainly don't have to, but it's a piece of bread and a cup of juice that represent Jesus' body and blood, and it helps us to remember what he did on the cross for us, and we can thank him through taking communion. So we're going to give you this time. Band's going to play a song. If you'd like to take communion, you can go and get the bread and juice, bring it back to your seat, and whenever you're ready, you can take it. Okay? First, I'll pray for you, and then we'll give you those few minutes to pray. God, as that song said, we're calling out to you. And, sometimes our cries out to you start as a whisper, and then they become this roar that sounds like an orchestra. God, we're crying out to you and asking you to help us, because maybe we're stuck in a pit. Maybe we feel like we're stuck in slavery, but like we are stuck in a situation we can't get out of. God, if we listen today, we're going to hear you calling out to us, saying, wait, and offering us your grace. God, help us to receive it. You want to take the bad things in our life and work them together for good and use them to move us from our dream to our destiny. God, what you did in Joseph's life, you can do in ours. And so would you help us to stay faithful to you just like he was. God, we thank you for your amazing grace that Jesus showed us on the cross. And we pray all these things in his name. Amen.